Welcome to episode 3 of Golf Nerds. I'm about to chat to Barney, just your average golfer on YouTube and on Instagram. Barney, anywhere else you've used that hashtag?
Not yet. I need to get onto the other social media outlets, but if I'm honest, I'm struggling to keep up with the ones I work with at the moment.
No, that's understandable. Me too. Barney, we're doing this as live can be. Just before I introduced, you said to me, so how are we going to do this? You're going to ask me questions. And yes, I am. So okay. I want to just tick off some basics, because I've been following you on online for a while, but not everybody has. So could you give me a brief introduction to your golfing history?
Okay, right. I'm a man of many words, so I'll try and keep this as short as I can. So I started playing golf when I was about 9. My dad introduced me. He wasn't necessarily a professional. He was an average golfer. And he gave me a few tips. My golf through, as a kid, was playing golf with my dad. And we played every now and again. He wasn't a member of a club, and nor was I. So golf was like, just a special treat every now and again. I played golf on and off for most of my life. I even was a greenkeeper when I left school for a year, because I thought that I could try and get into golf that way. And then fell in love with cars, so I moved into the motor trade.
On cue, like tricked out Impreza just drove by me.
That was me about 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think this car was probably 10 or 15 years ago, to be fair.
It might have been one of mine. Golf kind of like went by the wayside a bit, as it does. And it was actually 2016, I had a trip to play on a iconic course.
If it wasn't Augusta, you can say the name.
So it was basically, it was a mid-ocean golf club in Bermuda, which, for the proper golf nerds out there, they used to host the PGA Championship at, which was the end of the year of sort of fun event they did. They mic'd up the major winners and they went out and they played around to see who the PGA champion was at the end of the year. Because the course is literally golfing paradise. I don't know if there's a prettier course in the world. Someone's gonna get challenged me on that, but my wife was actually born in Bermuda, and my father-in-law was a member there when they lived there. So the very first time I met him, I saw a picture of this aerial shot of this golf course and just thought, where the hell is that? And he explained, and 10 years later I finally got to have a crack at playing it. So I thought, you know what, I better have some freaking golf lessons and try, and so I don't hack my way around there. And that was essentially the catalyst to trying to get good at golf. That was 2016. And I went down the very conventional route. I had lessons, the traditional lessons, 6 for 5.
Good old 6 for 5. Started off.
Yeah. And then proceeded to work through those, practiced a lot. It then just turned into a full and obsession of trying to, because I just couldn't understand for the life of me, as being a naturally gifted sports person in other areas, I just couldn't understand why golf was so difficult. Why was I struggling with essentially hitting a little white ball towards a target? But I was going down, like I said, the conventional route. I was wrist angles, working on P4 through to P6 regularly, making sure that my left wrist was flat at the right point.
I had alignment sticks everywhere. Ulnar deviation must have been a big part of your life at that point.
Say that again, sorry?
Ulnar deviation.
Oh God, I was all over a bit of that, and all the other. Oh my God, it was. To think back now, generally a little bit of sick comes up in my mouth of just, I was that guy on the range just working through my takeaway just religiously for ages, hours on end with any swing aid, training aid I could think of. And yeah, I had lessons through the best part of 3 or 4 years of lessons, online lessons, books, YouTube videos, including even the very robot that Bryson DeChambeau uses to practice on the Robo Pro Golf. I even had a whole set of lessons using that to try and understand the golf swing. And all of that combined to nothing.
Nothing. Zero outcome.
No, I was. The only thing that I genuinely think made any difference to my game at this point was just the sheer amount of practice I was putting in, just physically hitting golf balls, and the difference of just understanding about just experience, basically, of going through it. But the advice and lessons I had, if I'm honest, the some of the stuff that people were telling me to do. I mean, oh God, it's frightening that these professionals that I've went to seek advice for, essentially just ruined me.
So I'm going to ask you to park that idea for a moment, because I don't think I need to reiterate on this podcast, and I don't think it'll be a surprise to someone. I'm not a huge fan of standard coaching methods. Therefore, we don't need to go into that in depth, especially just yet.
Yeah.
So you had a whole bunch of lessons and you felt like you got nowhere. And there was an outcome to that which has led you to the point that you're on the biggest golfing podcast in the world. was that?
I had a couple of eureka moments, but essentially it's kind of started on the route of, it can't be this hard. It really can't be this hard. And then what I started to do is, I was a fairly successful, not professional or anything else, but I was a fairly handy basketball player. And it was as soon as I started to sort of like change my mindset into other sports and using what had made me successful in other sports into playing golf, when I started treating golf like a sport, that all of a sudden things started to click for me, and essentially the natural athlete inside me was able to come out and shine.
That is awesome. So let's think. I don't remember ever translating basketball to golf, but I may have done, because I take a student's sporting ability and translate it into golf quite naturally. It's my go-to really method. So thinking of basketball, you've got you're using a projectile, but when that projectile is in the air, due to the weight and size of that projectile, sort of spin is not going to play a huge effect on the ball, and you're generally inside, so you've got no wind.
Exactly.
How did you translate what you know about basketball to golf?
Okay, so I am 5'11". I weigh next to the equivalent of a sheet of paper. I'm not the fastest person. I can't jump that high. To look at me, there is nothing really that would mean that I could actually be a dominant player on a basketball court.
But
the thing that I did better, should we say, or more often, was just make the right decision at the right time.
Interesting. That's cool. Go on, keep going.
Yeah, there was that is one element to it. So I was like, well, okay, that's definitely something working on. I was the team's best free throw shooter. So when we shot free throws, you're standing from the same static position. The ring isn't moving, the ball is in your hands, and you've got total control over that situation. And
that's
go through essentially a pre-shot routine and you take the shot. And I was that guy that if we needed to, if there was a technical foul, and I won't explain the rules, but I was on the free throw line at the end of the game to win the game on more than one occasion. So I've been through that kind of environment before, where the pressure was on the line and you've got to go through and trust your own ability to get the result, which I mean, I can't think of anything more that sounds like a golf swing when you're standing in a static position trying to make the same move that you've made a billion times.
Except but, with a golf swing, we have been taught historically to stand perpendicular to the target line. Now, I've got a really limited knowledge of basketball instruction, but I'm aware that's more than most British people have. For a free throw, you certainly don't stand perpendicular to the target line. You probably stand at a 45-degree angle.
Well, it was. Yeah, you're right, 100%. And there was the elements of... So I was lucky enough to get some coaching by some very high-level coaches through basketball camps that I went to, and some of the circles of levels and people that I knew. And what was interesting, it was where the way they would teach you to shoot a basketball, which is now how I teach people to swing the golf club, is very different to the way that golf instruction is, because golf instruction is just a monster to its own self. There is you couldn't play any other sport if a golf instructor told you to play that sport in the style of golf instruction. You just couldn't do it.
No.
You would just be paralyzed by paralyzed by analysis, I think it is, whatever that phrase
paralysis
is.
Analysis.
Yeah, exactly. So when we learn to shoot a basketball, you are learned to shoot a basketball with the job of, you basically want to shoot the ball with enough trajectory to get over the front of the ring and drop in.
Yes.
You don't want it to go, it doesn't want to go straight at the ring. It needs to have enough trajectory to drop over the front of the ring.
Yeah.
And they teach you that in basketball that is basically what you need to do. And they don't really teach you too much mechanics in how to do that, which is why every basketball player's jump shot will look completely different to the next player.
I was which is funny, get there, because that's what I was thinking about with free throws. Does one NBA free throw star stand exactly the same way as another?
No. And this is exactly the point. You're going down the right route with this. So when I took a free throw, even though I practiced that spot and it was from the same distance, every shot I took was under a completely different set of circumstances. Okay?
Yeah.
Because of the condition in the game. And there's the way I feel, you know, where it's the end of the game and I'm knackered, or it's the beginning of the game and I'm pumped up. And therefore, the release of the ball, even though I tried to make the same shot every time, the release of my shot was different compared to the way I felt. But I didn't care about that. I only cared about the ball going in the ring.
Yeah, because that's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, and that's it. It's just getting the ball in the ring. So some days I would, you know, release the shot and I'd release my hand really high, and other times I'd hardly feel like I'd release the shot at all, and I'd hardly flick my wrist at the end at all. It just kind of felt more like a push some days. But you never questioned it. It was just, did the ball go in the hole? Yeah, good, done. Right, points on the board. Did we win? Yes, move on. There was that element, and then there was the other element as well, where with time as well, because when you take a free throw, you go into a pre-shot routine, you set yourself up, and you then go into that sort of flow state, they call it, where you then sort of, you're in the zone and you basically just let it happen, and yeah. You just kind of, your pre-shot routine gets you into that. So I utilised that into golf. And then my absolute real kind of one as well was, I was a fairly decent three-point shooter.
Okay.
But if I was standing on the outside and I was open, I would wait for someone to run at me. Because if I was open, I had too much time to think about it.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I have spent the last 12 months putting into my golf game. And even yesterday, I played 18 yesterday, and pretty ropey, but... had a few good shots, and it was those moments where there was one shot, it was a bunker shot, and I to be fair, I don't practice bunker shots because I don't have time. And I stood outside the bunker and thought about the feeling I wanted as the club head went through the ball.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of swings to think about how hard I need to hit it to get reasonably close, and I literally, I don't want to say I did a Happy Gilmore, a walking shot, but I was damned close to it. I literally just walked up to it. You can't really have a practice swing in a bunker. You can have a couple of waggles or whatever. I planted my feet, looked up, looked at the ball, last look, fired, and put it to 6 inches. And I thought, that's one of the best bunker shots I've hit in the last 15 years.
Oh, but right, and this is another thing, right, with golf as well, and the same thing with basketball. You could go and say to yourself, great shot. Let me see if I can do that again. But the beauty thing in golf and any sport, you don't have to. You did it when it mattered. You did it. So it's done. You don't have to be able to replicate that shot again, because you'll never, ever, ever be able to replicate those same exact situation, conditions and environment ever again. Not ever.
No, I will never need to hit that exact shot again. I may need to hit another 15-yard bunker shot, but the sand won't be the same. Even if I'm in the exact same spot in the same bunker, the weather will be different and the sand conditions will be different.
Exactly. So when we said initially, and I might be jumping into this here, so I'll back off if you want me to.
No, go for it.
But when we initially said we were going to do a chat together, and I don't know if you remember, but I said to you, I've got a banging topic to talk about.
Yes.
And,
I did.
Yeah. So we've got there already without us having to go there. And essentially, the topic I was going to bring up is the stock shot in golf.
Okay. Go. Tell me about it.
So genuinely, that makes me feel, because we've got into this category, or this, or golfers have got into this mentality now with TrackMan and numbers and all the rest of the flight scopes of, right, my club does this. So they walk out on the golf course and they go, I'm 150 yards out. I'm going to hit my 150 yard club. And they have paid no attention at all to the situation, the environment, the conditions, anything. They're just trying to hit the perfect 150 yard shot, which they were doing on the range, you know, two nights ago. And yet,
I couldn't agree
on the range.
Yeah.
And we've forgotten that this is a sport. We've forgotten that that is a shot, and it's a unique moment in time when they can actually walk up to it, and they should, whatever their feelings, whatever their thoughts and feelings are, whether they stand over that shot and they look at a lie and they go, I just feel like I just want to punch her, whatever there, or I'm going to cut her, whatever in there, or just get a little bit more creativity towards it. I guarantee you, once you embrace this, you will play the most refreshing level of golf you've ever played, but you also play the best level of golf you've ever played.
I'm going to ask you a incendiary question then, off the back of that.
Go on then.
If you're standing over a 150-yard shot at Carnoustie, you have a million options on how to play that shot. If you're standing over a 150-yard shot, and I'm just going to pull another famous course of the opposite type, Sawgrass, you've got one shot. Because a Lynx course, then let's presume it's playing up to its Lynx stereotypes. It's a little harder, a little faster, and the wind is a little heavier than if you're at a classic American resort course. You've got options. If you're at a Lynx course, you think, okay, I'm 150 out. Normally I fly my pitching wedge 140. I'm gonna hit my pitching wedge high, land it at 140, and it's gonna roll out 30 feet. Or do I run in an 8-iron? You know, you've got countless options, all that essentially deliver the same result. Whereas if you're a classic American resort course, you've got, I'm 150 from the stick, there's no wind, I know the ball is going to stop where it lands if I hit anything between a 7-iron and a pitching wedge. If I hit anything shorter than a pitching wedge, it's going to spin back, so I've got to be even longer through the air. But essentially, you've got one shot. And the only reason you pick different clubs is obstacles.
Okay. So I disagree with you on this, because I do believe you've got one shot, but that shot will present itself to you once you've had the experience, when you've had some experience. And the problem we've got is, and I'm going to quote a golf coach here in the UK, Kendall McQuaid. He reckons that we are information rich, experience poor.
Yeah, and I think that shows itself on in tournaments such as those on the wedge.com tour, because these guys know how to hit 330-yard drives, and they're awesome for 120 yards in. Beyond that, they are still fantastically good, but they're nowhere near as good, in my opinion, as pro golfers from 30 years ago of that caliber.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I mean, the years of the swashbuckling Sevies and just being able to... I mean, we've got obviously got Bubba Watson now, but I mean, to just do whatever you wanted to do, because this is essentially where I'm trying to get to with this, is that we are too busy trying to control our bodies and trying to control our swings, and we've forgotten we're actually, the whole point of the game is to control the freaking golf ball.
Yeah, and which brings us back to John Jacobs. It's all about the ball flight, and like everything else is secondary.
Yeah, exactly. So when we're saying we've got different options, I mean, you could hit the same club. I mean, well, you've got, well, according to, you know, Tiger Woods and everybody else, you've got 9 different ball flights you can hit with the same club.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got a lot of options to choose from, but it's a case of walking up there and actually saying, rather than saying my stock shot is this, I would rather go, what do I feel I could do 8 out of 10 times? And that option will just present itself to you of, and it might even not be necessarily what you would think would be the right option before you'd walk there, but you might just walk up and get that feeling that, you know what, I want to do this. And sometimes, I mean, I've started playing some ludicrous shots now where it's like, I'm going to hit a chippy 5-iron. And it's like, just because I know that a bit of solid contact on that, blah, 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 blah. It's just the shot has presented itself to me because I've started to play around with different shots.
I've actually started trying to chip from a long way out. Literally 2 weeks ago, I heard some PGA Tour commentary, and Joe Golfer was 137 out, and he just said to his caddy, "I'm just going to chip a 9-iron in." And he did. He just took a very big chip swing. He put his weight forward, didn't break his wrists, and it was a big chip. And pretty boring shot.
Loads of spin.
Well, it wasn't even that, actually. Middle of the green, hopped once, hopped forward a couple of feet. It was just like, why am I not doing that?
We've been absolutely just been brainwashed by watching the coverage on TV, of watching essentially the top 1% of golfers, and then we then watch the top 10 of the 1% of golfers having a blinder. We're essentially watching a highlight film. Every Sunday, we're just watching a highlight reel.
Yeah.
And yet, we walk away going, thinking that that's the way we're supposed to play golf. But yet, like, Dustin Johnson didn't get any coverage in the British Open this year. And yet, because he was down the field having a bit of a mare. And he was world number one at the time.
Yeah, I know. And it's, from a golf nerd perspective, I want to see Dustin Johnson grind out a 72.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I would learn so much from that.
Yeah, you know, we only get to see him when he's on, and it's like, and the same with all these guys, and it's like, you know, I did a post on this on social media and got a bit of a roasting for it, but you know, we don't mind about that, do we? But basically it was all down to the Ryder Cup and saying how I love watching the Ryder Cup because of the limited field. The TV coverage has to show us the professionals playing essentially badly.
Yeah.
Like, because there's not enough, there's a limited field. So you get to see, I mean, some of the golf in the Ryder Cup this year, there was some excellent golf, but there was also some pretty horrific moments from both sides. And you just think to yourself, well, that's not what I expect to see from these guys, but actually it's what they do week in, week out. We just don't often see it.
So the predecessor, your predecessor on this podcast, Zach Blair.
Yes.
I walked 9 holes with him last Friday at the web event here in Panama. And he shot 68, but I walked the front 9. And he ground out a really, I think he was 1 under. But a lot of his game was not amazing drive, Not amazing approach shot. Not amazing chip. Really good 8-foot putt.
Yeah, yeah.
And I say that with the utmost respect for Zach. For the first half of that game, he didn't have it. I can think of one hole, and it would say playing 440 yards. He's not the longest of hitter, so he's playing into the wind. The fairway was tight, so he hit a drive. It looked to me like it came out the heel, and he left himself 200 into the green.
Ouch.
Yeah. He hit... I didn't have my luxury press pass on me at that point, so I was outside of the ropes. So I think he hit a long iron. It could have been a driving iron in from 200. Because, again, it's blowing quite strong. He put it into a greenside bunker because the green was really well protected. He would have had to get on the green. He would have had to hit a high fade against the wind, like almost impossible. Because if you hit a draw, it's just going to miss.
Yeah.
And he tried it, but it came up short. Naturally, because the swerve of the ball's fighting the wind, so it's really hard to judge your distance. Greenside bunker, came out to 6 feet, and rolled in a putt for par. And, like, that's pro golf. That's him earning his money.
I mean, you put that guy, anyone else in that position who's not just ground that out, and, you know, you've got to be a very elite level golfer to be able to, because he's essentially, you know, you could say he's probably hit two bad shots and then two really good shots with the bunker shot and the putt. But you could also say
bad shots and one really good putt. The bunker shot was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, but it was like, but it was a case of he just got it done. Yeah. I mean, there's a great quote, and I don't know who said it, but you've got to dance with who you brung.
Yeah.
You know, because you just, when you turn up on a golf course, and this is something that people don't really think of because they've been practicing all week, they turn up and they expect, I'll put the hours in, I'll put the practice in, I'm going to turn up, I'm going to play well. I mean, I had this for years, and I couldn't understand why I'd walk out on the first tee, and after three holes, I was already hit my limit on my handicap, and I was like, what's going on here? I've been practicing all week, I should be better than this. But it was like, I just tried to basically make a square peg fit a round hole. I didn't walk out on the golf course and go, what are the conditions doing? What do I need to do today? How do I feel as a human being? I'm a bit nervous. Well, there's no point in me trying anything too aggressive because right now, until this point in time, I've probably got a lot of tension in my body. These kind of conversations, these kind of thoughts, processes now, people just walk out and expect to be able to just pull their driving range game out and put it onto the golf course. And it's not working.
No, and it doesn't work.
It won't work, and it never will work.
I'm aware of time, and today it's not your time I'm aware of, it's mine. I'm going to stop you there to big you up a little. Those of you that have put in, let's say, 25 minutes into this podcast, hopefully are fully aware of Barney's knowledge of the game of golf. This is a guy who, and please correct me if I'm wrong, has no qualifications in the game of golf.
Zero.
Has no acknowledgement from a regulatory body of his knowledge of the game. And yet, can have a conversation with me, not our first chat by any means, help me learn more about the game of golf. And I have plenty of golf qualifications. I am acknowledged by a regulatory body as a professional golfer, and I have a ton of paying golf students. Why is that? And it's not, why is Barney so good? Why, when I've sat through countless seminars on golf, can someone like Barney pick it up from YouTube? And I say that with respect. And the reason is that golf instruction for coaches is as broken as golf instruction for students. I went to a training seminar a week ago, and if you're geeky enough, you can work out which one it is, but I don't want to talk bad about anyone. by name. And the seminar was 8 hours long. I'm going to say the first 2 hours, 3 hours were great. And I was WhatsApping or texting you from that course, wasn't I, Barney?
Yeah, yeah.
The afternoon session was a sales pitch for me to sell my students their training equipment. And I paid for the privilege to be on that course. Now, I will get value from that course, even if I didn't learn anything. I'm not sure I hugely learned anything. I was more just hugely surprised that these guys were delivering quality content, even if it was just for half of the day. Because I've been to so many golf training things and just said, well, I've got the bit of paper, that's all I was here for. So I can tell my students I'm serious about my personal development, because that is important. But I actually learned something from these guys. But then half of my fee, you could say, I spent to sit through them selling me stuff. And I find that offensive. I don't pay to go to a shop. Which is why I don't go to the PGA show. So Barney, you have this amazing knowledge of the game. You've picked up a few golf students, yeah?
Yeah. I'm currently testing out my theories at the moment with a bunch of guys, and we're doing it very privately at the moment because I don't want to protect them from people that are necessarily not on board with the way I'm doing things at the moment, because I'm not a qualified coach and all the yada yada yada. So I just want to get these guys, but then when we produce the results, or when we produce the results out there, it will become evident, and then I'll hopefully be able to do something more about this, because I'm trying to do this through results rather than qualifications.
And I think that's you're ahead of, I'm going to say, 95% of the golf coaching industry right there. So with that in mind, I appreciate the regular golfers you're helping with their game require protection. But I don't. So will you take me on?
I'd love to. I'd love the opportunity to work with you guys. That would be amazing.
Okay, so let's document that in the future. And as we go on in this podcast, I will talk about how I'm progressing with Barney's coaching program, for lack of a better term.
And it's what it is. It's all written down. It's ready and available.
You showed me a screenshot of you typing the other day. but yeah, no, I'm serious, because I've got a pretty solid golf swing, and I know enough about course management that I feel I should be able to deliver better results. And I'm not going to say I've tried everything else, but I've tried a lot. So I'm very serious about my game. I played 18 yesterday with a student. My head was mostly in the game. And 18 the day before with a different student, and my head was in the game for the first nine. First nine, I was one under the course, but a very easy golf course. One of the par fives is 400 yards long. I hit driver 8 iron in, which lets you know how far I hit the ball. A 400 yard hole, I hit driver 8 iron, which is respectable enough, but it's not like I'm DJ.
This is really exciting. I'm really up for this. I mean, one of the things I am going to do, and I can tell you this much, one of the guys I'm working with is a very accomplished golfer who's lost his way a bit and tried a conventional route, and
you're unfucking him.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
I've got to get that on a shirt, you know.
Yeah. Well, we're making plans at the moment where I'm actually going to go and caddy him in one of his one of the national events this year.
Amateur event.
Yeah.
Awesome. You will learn so much.
But also, he's won it before a few years ago, and he wants it back again, and we're on track. So he's playing golf again now. And I think that with with me on the bag telling him essentially what to do, because he can do what I want him to do, he's got the ability, like, you know, like you could, then I think that's a pretty potent combination.
All right.
And also, that will also make the golfing world sit up and look when we start winning some stuff.
Okay, Barney, give yourself a 30-second plug before we go.
All right, so I'm Barney, just your average golfer on Instagram and YouTube. My preferred platform is Instagram. I post on there more than on YouTube just because of the time frame. But I have got aspirations and plans to do a lot more with this. I'm working very hard in the background. I'm talking to some people I really, really shouldn't be allowed to talk to, very high level coaches. I have a mentor, and I'm not going to mention who he is, who is also giving me advice along the way. And I'm going for this.
Barney, this is a bit of a... That's great. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey.
It's been awesome.